them on dry cleaning, they're indulging them on beer, they're indulging them on rents, they're indulging them on every damn thing. Yeah. But that's blew it up, so.
Yeah. Speaking of Escanaba Park, that came about, of course, after the Escanabas. It was Kelly Park up until.
It was named Kelly Park before that,
But that, so that would have come about sometime after the war.
Yeah.
Or was it during the war?
I think that came during about the time. It was before the Armed Forces Act. The Armed Forces Act made the big change in our lives. Because at that time, prior to that time, the Coast Guard was not an armed service. They were a life-saving organization.
Uh-huh.
They had national status, but they were not a fighting force until the War of Vietnam. Then the Coast Guard, that's how the Coast Guard became an armed force. See? That's when we were given the honor. When that was passed, we had a rider, and that we had the help of Bob Griffin, Jerry Ford, Belupi helped us. Who the hell else did we have there? Oh, Phil Hart. Hell, he did a hell of a lot for being a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we have the in the congressional record, it says.
Now, is this 1950s?
48.
Oh, it was 48?
Yeah, 48.
1948.
Yeah. And at that time, it says in the congressional record that all birthdays for all armed services would be celebrated on Armed Forces Day. In other words, it would be no more Army Day, no more Navy Day, no more Air Force Day, no more Marine Day. They were all services going to be honored on the week of August. I mean, the Armed Forces, what do you call it?
Which is what? Is that April, May, or is that November?
November something.
It is. Changed Armistice Day to Armed Forces Day.
Yeah.
Of course. Okay.
And then it says in there that the Coast Guard, being a non-military organization, the official birthday of the Coast Guard birthday, the official memorial service would be held in the city of Grand Haven on the week of August the 4th. That was it.
And that's in there.
Oh yeah, that's in the congressional record. As the bill was passed, all the others, at that time Coast Guard was not an armed force.
Uh-huh.
See?
Uh-huh.
So that's what gave us that first one. Then, of course, when they got to be Armed Forces Day, that's been changed, you know, but the Coast Guard is the smallest of the Armed Forces group. They got the best. They recognized the Coast Guard band as the best Armed Forces military band, even over the Marine band. A lot of distinctions there, but the congressional record, that's the way it's set. It's named Grand Haven.
Now that's 1948, before they were part of the Armed Forces. They were still with the Treasury Department.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then they went into the Board of Transportation.
And that was, was that 60? That
was early 60s before that was in there.
Yeah.
Then also in there it also states in there that an unofficial memorial service will be held by the United States Navy in San Diego on August the 4th. That doesn't sound a week, just a moment. They actually had a small, what do you call it, honoring the Coast Guard in San Diego.
Oh, did they really?
Most people don't even hear about that, but they do.
Hmm. What's going to be your role this August 4th coming up? Are you going to be honored? Are you going to be... You haven't heard about it, huh?
I haven't heard. Of course, now with Marge being out of there, Marge did a lot of things that were not good. The Coast Guard had been very shaky the last year or so, because they stuck their neck out for thousands of dollars. They got real scared.
To get this group command here? And or you
well, now, that? Things shaped up. Now they've got a group commander that should be gone by now, but he's being held over.
Myself.
That's the only thing that's saving their ass right now. And he's worried about it, because Claude talks an awful lot. I talked to him and Claude and Bob and all together, stuff like that. I don't stick my nose into it. There's some things that have got to change. For instance, I received a letter that's about 3 weeks ago, and I was dumbfounded. And I didn't see the parade 2 years ago, because that's when my wife had surgery that morning, and they couldn't get her out of it. They didn't pull her out until around 6 o'clock that night. We thought she was gone. She was absolutely dead. And then all of a sudden, a blood transfusion, and she finally pulled out of it. So my kids all went to the parade, and they all came back, and about half an hour, they said it was disgusting. And I didn't pay much attention to it, and I don't know what happened. But I got a letter from a member of the Army Band, 128th Infantry Band from Grand Rapids. Now, that's got people in there from all over Western Michigan.
Sure.
One of them is Harry DeMille's son in the band. And from, Harry was in the National Guard, wasn't he? Yeah, Harry.
What was his last name? That Pick.
DeMille,
you're
yeah,
right.
That,
Harry DeMille. Yeah.
And he said, Chuck, we know you better. We know that you haven't anything to do with it. But did you know that not this past year, but the year before, the band participated with the Coast Guard parade, and they were in the 4th Division? And that made me sick. It made me sick last year, because last year I listened to the radio, and that was the most disoriented outfit, this strike. He can go to hell as far as I'm concerned, but with all his knowledge that he should have known, it should have been done that way. In the first place, they run the dignitaries through twice.
Yeah, yeah.
To this day, I don't know where the official reviewing stand was.
Yeah.
Some said it was by the Second Reformed Church there. Some said it was by the Christian Haven homes. Others said it was by your old office.
Yeah.
Anyway, kept going, and that parade waited. Well, they run an half-hour schedule behind. Then they got a hold of one of their spotters. He was on the corner of Sheldon and Fifth. Well, we're right here now. We can hear the drum beat. They should be here any minute. Then they couldn't raise them again. They broke down. The truck broke down. They got a truck that's out of whack, and they're escorting it out of town here. There was no fucking truck. Jesus Christ. So then, come the dignitaries. And you couldn't hear that. He had very poor, now when we had a cook, Jack Cook, he used to get special equipment at Grand Rapids, you know. God, he covered that damn thing. Like the radio station, he'd drop an outfit there up above their office and Doug was upstairs over there,
yeah.
You know.
Uh-huh.
And never had trouble. Here, they built a lead-to or something, evidently, and California, and then blew out. And then
you know that.
All he talked about, he had some gal with him, and oh, she was having a good time, and she was squirting water at things. Oh, that's a no-no. Yeah. You don't squirt water at the goddamn dignitaries. You know, that's the worst damn thing in the world.
Yeah.
That's why I had very specifically, when you signed up for a trade, that said, notice, warning, you are prohibited from throwing any candy, missile, anything from the from your unit in the trade. Very strict about that. The city used to raise hell with me on that. The biggest fucking criticism was always Clausen. And who should he do? They had a float they were supposed to have for the Kiwanis Club. They were so loaded down with stuff, they didn't go through the parade route, they didn't start what they were supposed to. I waited for them and they didn't show up. And suddenly, how old are they? They were dragging it out on the street on top of the hill. And that fucking kids were all over the place. I sent the motorcycle up there. Jesus Christ, they're throwing candy all over hell, he says. Awesome. There's a guy that was on the city council, for Christ's sake, you know. So anyway, then died down and it was nothing. Well, then the dignitaries got through the second one. And then, a little bit of it, oh, here we come. Oh, here comes the Coast Guard band. Here comes the Coast Guard band. I said, you dumb son of a bitch. The Coast Guard band isn't within 1,000 miles of Grand Haven. They've known it for a year. The Coast Guard band last year started in Maine, the first celebration of
that's right.
This year.
That's
they
right.
weren't here.
Uh-huh.
Everybody knew it. They knew the Mackinac wasn't going to be here. They all knew that. So anyway, he said, oh, here comes the Coast Guard band. The council says, no, that isn't a Coast Guard band. I mean, that looks like an army. Oh, it's got to be Coast Guard band, Coast Guard band. See? I don't know anything about it. Coast Guard band is supposed to be leaving the parade. But it was the Army band.
Yeah.
Coast Guard, and he kept pretending as he talked to me. He said, I can't understand why the Coast Guard band is here.
Yeah.
Now, what the fuck outfit, you know?
See, he should know.
He should have. Christ, one thing in the parade, when I got through the goddamn parade the last minute, I had a runner go right up to the radio station with a goddamn corrected sheet. Any cancellation or anything, they knew it all. They had the slips just like I did.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And we never missed anybody. They knew who was there. God, this guy here. Well, I think it's so-and-so. Oh, here comes the Salvation Army band from Grand Haven. It wasn't the Salvation Army band from Grand Haven, goddammit. It was from Battle Creek. It was the brother of Ed Anderson.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because I knew it before, because Ed Anderson, I said, you son of a bitch.
Oh,
I said, I tried to get bands from Chicago, and you always failed me. Well, my brother wants to come down. My brother, he's coming down, so they're coming. So, you know, and I knew that 3 months. Sure enough, they never corrected it. They said the Grand Haven band. And it was Battle Creek.
Tell me this, before we get too far along, you went for, I want to get back to the early roots of the festival. From 34, 35, you had a picnic. Then finally, you read about this fete. Now, was there a parade involved there?
Yeah, that's when we started the parade. We call it the Water Fete. F-E-T-E.
Yeah.
And then I started the first parade.
You did. That was the first
and
parade.
And I went all over hell. Of course, I had the advantage. I could go all over the county and, on patrol and stuff
you're
like that.
You were in the sheriff's department.
Yeah, because I'd get the fire truck here, the hay reaper here, any fucking thing I could get, you know. That was it. But see, I had gone through a parade when we had the bicentennial in Grand Haven.
Then, oh, that was 34, of course.
Right. That... I got the book on that, except the coin, Bledich. Borrowed it, brought it back, and I finally got it back without the coin. Oh, I got a lot of them, but I never got it, but I got it. And in there, I had charge of the labor division. So my dad and I, old Andrew Haas, we made the rounds, Eagle, Ottawa. My dad had charge of it, he was ahead of the Japanese department making Pat Leather. Bill Hatton brought him in from Newark, New Jersey, plus 13 more families in 2 years from the time. But my dad came here in 1914. They bought a house that same afternoon, Prospect Gardner, Denver, where Fred Pelton was. A house there, and then they built that building, and then a grocery store and all
right,
that.
Right, yeah.
And when he was walking from the depot to Hatton, he saw this at for sale sign. So he got to the office, met with Bill Hatton and Julian, and he said, well, you got to have a place to stay. And he said, well, I'm looking for a house. You are? Yeah. Well, he said, we'll fix you up. So they called People's Bank, and out come Ted Bolt with a horse and wagon, horse and buggy.
You're kidding.
They picked up my dad, and he said, well, we'll go over here. No, I know right where I want to go. Go right down the street. I want to stop, I want to see this house. 1326 Fulton Street. And right then and there, he had $1,200 in his jeans, paid $800 in cash.
For the house.
Yep.
$800.
And ironically, 2 years later, he sold that house and bought the one at 1326 Franklin, where my mother lives now. 1326.
Sure.
He fell in love with that because he had the banker's shop and Stanley Sutherland.
Yep.
Had rooms, and he said, "You can, Jake, you stay with us. You eat with us." He said, "You stay with us. It won't cost you anything." And he lived the back of our house, then the alley, and then it was a big open field. Then on the corner was Morris when he was a band director. And then on this side there was an old house belonged to a Brown family.
Now this is on Fulton.
No, this is on Franklin.
Okay.
And he saw the back end of his house. He used to walk back there. He liked that because a nice garden space. He wanted a garden.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But 2 years later, he sold the house on Fulton Street and he bought the one on, what do you call it? And at that time,
so then
there was no garden or Denver there. The only thing back there was fastened was way back. That was the circus grounds. Then Grand Haven Brass, and then on the corner was Lionel Heap, David Shithouse covers.
Oh, is that right?
But my dad and Craig, they had a great big flatbed truck, and they put the horses up there with the frames, and they was Japanning leather.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, grew up there, so throwing the mud, you know. And they had samples of the leather and all this.
Now that would have been 34.
Right,
34.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Then Lionel Heat, they had a big full tire with all the different Pilot Street covers. I think that's one of the things that, no, that's a Scottville band. They gave me a Pilot Street cover with a picture inside.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but the, who the hell has got that? Somebody in my family's got that. I think it's my nephew's got that. My mother hated it. She didn't like that. She didn't think it was right to have her son's picture of the shithouse. Then we had the Grand Haven Brass with all these different brass pictures. Then we had Bassett Blessing, and they had a regular soda fountain, the original, the small ones.
Sure.
The marbles, what do you call it?
Yeah.
And they were dishing out cones, so everybody along the playground got a cone.
Isn't that something?
Cups with ice cream dessert on it.
Huh.
And then we had the basket factory, great big baskets of all kinds. They were down there on 7th and what do you call it?
Mm-hmm.
And the piano factory had big cone with their pianos on it. I forget, I had something like 13 big units, I mean big ones.
And you helped put that together?
Yeah, I did that all. I had a committee, but I was chairman of it.
Uh-huh.
That's in that book. But anyway,
No Scottville band that day.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Then the nice part of that was Grand Haven never had a Labor Day parade. They always had the Labor Day parade at Mona Lake in Muskegon.
Uh-huh.
So they wanted, the unions wanted a Labor Day parade.
Uh-huh.
So they came to me and wanted Labor Day parade. So I had to get permission from old Olson, Cap Olson.
Oh, sure.
See, he was in charge of the whole thing. He was a grand marshal or some damn thing.
Do you know Betty Hickey? That's his daughter.
Yeah. They used to live right back in the People's Bank.
Yeah, I guess they did.
Well, anyway, for that Labor Day, we had the Labor Parade. Geez, what a success. It started at Schuylkill Field, is now.
Yeah.
That was all wide open. We got all everything assembled there. Cape Washington and up the street. And of course,
you went all the way? Where? All the way to the waterfront?
Nope, to City Hall.
City Hall.
Around the corner and back. See, at that time,
that's a long.
There was no Beacon Boulevard. It was just 7th Street.
Sure.
See?
Sure.
And that's where we went past, what do you call it, and then came back down Columbus Street.
Uh-huh.
Right on the corner. But that's when Colonel Olson said, from now on, Legalski is running the parades.
Is that right?
Yeah. He's the one that says, you don't want out praise, and he liked what I did. So that's, I started the first parade for the water feet. Also,
that would have been, okay, now 34. Was there one in 35? Probably not a parade.
That was a picnic at 35, 36, 37. It would be 19, I would say 37 or 38.
37, I think it was, the first fete.
First fete.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, because that's, I bought the store for Mara Shiguri, the Cashmere building. I bought that in 38. Right across the street from the store.
Oh, yes, right.
Store,
uh-huh.
Yeah, so that was in 38.
That's when you started your store down there.
Yeah, I bought the, from Marshall, there was a little bit of a variety store.
Uh-huh.
I bought that, and then I was forced out because Cashmere bought the building from Mrs. Bolt.
That's how it got to be M&M.
Yeah, Marsh and Murray. I was going to run a contest, but then I thought, well, I need credit. I didn't have money. I call it M&M.
Uh-huh.
Marsh and Murray.
Sure.
See?
Uh-huh.
And that didn't work out because they didn't have any credit. There was about four other M&Ms, and most of them were Indiana.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't help, but anyway, I survived.
Yeah, you did. So then you had the first fate, and you had, so that would have 37, 38.
And I had the first fireworks. I remember I ordered $250 worth of fireworks from Illinois Fireworks Company. It cost me $150 to get the fucking mortars here. Because I didn't know a mortar from Nashville at that time, you know.
Uh-huh.
Where now the mortars that I actually own, but I give it to the Fraser Fire Department, they control it.
Uh-huh.
And I've got to get my permission. But these are all that Jack and I had made.
Jack Olthoff?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Now we went out and got these steel tubes and then the big one, the 36-incher with the big bales that weighs about 600 pounds. That was stainless steel. And they made that for me at Dake Engine. And, not Dake Engine, but Johnson Boiler Works. They just happened to have a scrap piece of, what do you call it? It had to be about 5.5 feet deep. Then in the bottom, you have your piss alum, wood plug and all like that. You think that's funny, but it's piss alum.
Uh-huh.
It's just like toothpicks, solid toothpicks in it, uh-huh. Piss alum.
Uh-huh.
And that allows a little variation, see, because when the concussion, it absorbs a little bit of it.
So. Oh, I see. Okay.
And so it doesn't break into mortars. Of course, nowadays, they don't use steel tubes for everything. If anybody uses steel tubes for a dago bomb, they ought to get their ass kicked. They shouldn't be firing fireworks. Now, if you put up a dago bomb now, you use cardboard tubes. They're about an inch thick,
uh-huh.
What do you call it? So, if something happens, it just expands.
Yeah.
Then that hurt anybody. But if you put that into a mortar made out of
steel,
of iron,
uh-huh.
It annihilates you. You know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You
got a little scar left from one that I got hit. But,
is that right?
You got to watch that. And then,
where did you have these fireworks? Over on Dewey Hill? Yeah. Same place.
Same place, only we had to go across with old man... It's at the Harbor Avenue, and there's a delicatessen right down here. Then the house was right up on the hill here.
What the hell was that? Harbor Avenue?
Abinga. There's a house, and that one year an airplane came down and...
Oh, yes. Yep, right.
Abinga. He had a tug, fish tug.
Okay.
That's where we used to go across, see? Huh. In fact...
Yeah, you couldn't drive over there, could you?
No. Have you ever seen the article that Doug wrote on me burning down the other part of the hill?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I'll tell you what I want to ask you about. I talked to you about it over the phone. When you burned down the fish shed...
Yeah.
What year was that? Do you have that?
This is about the same thing.
Okay. You know, Charlie, I can remember one time you spoke at Rotary. Of course, you did every year for many, many years about the Coast Guard Festival.
Yeah.
And I said to the fellows, I said, you know, we've got to give Charlie Bukowski a hand. He can't carry on this all by himself. I didn't know you'd been doing it for 15 years. Writes some good articles, doesn't he?
Oh, beautiful.
He's good. Okay, all right. There it is. Mr. Coast Guard. You bet.
'86. No.
Yeah, that's what...
No, that's when this was published.
Oh, I see.
That's not...
Okay. Oh, here it is. Hope it... Get rid of 30 or 50 barrels of fish oil.
Right. That I got that in Abinga.
Okay.
I'll tell you how I got that.
Okay. The oil you used one time for hardwood floors and was a fire hazard. I guess we wanted something to use up the old... to use up an old landmine, which he had hoped to use to display the year before, rain forced cancellation of the 47 show and nearly ruined the landmine. The putter hardwood...
That would be 48 then.
Is that... I can remember when you did that, though, and I wasn't here in 48. I thought I could, anyway. The fire was a sensation. Must have been 48.
Yeah, that's right there.
That was, the big night arrived. And a naive crowd thought another sensational show was at an end when flames suddenly snaked through the grass and fuses hissed. Was there an accident? Then, without a warning, a gigantic explosion. Still laughing and unabashedly, Bukowski released debris scattered over the hill. Well, you know, I still think that you did one other thing. This was a fish hut. That was, where was this one located?
Right across where the...
You did another one. It would have been 19, in the late 1950s, you burned down another one. That would have been at the tail end of the show, the fireworks show, and it would have been... But this would have put it down closer to the where the North Shore Marina is now, and it was probably the last fishing hut left over there, and you burned that one down.
We were all down at once.
I can still see that house in flames over there, or that
this shed. One was about this much was exposed, and that went back in there about 100 feet. That's where all the fish nets were.
Okay.
Then there was a two-story house here. This was two-story. Then there was a...
Did anyone ever live in that?
Oh, yeah, years ago. Yeah, they lived in there. That was a regular home. Old house, two-story.
And where was this located?
Right across from the fountain.
Right where the fountain is now?
It's just...
Be downstream a bit, maybe.
Just a little bit downstream, because at that time... Well, it's got to be at the fountain, because how this happened, I got a call one day at the store from Jarecki, old man Jarecki.
Oh, yeah,
and
sure.
And he knew me because of Jerry Ford.
Okay.
He furnished a yacht that took Jerry Ford when I took Rotary Club out in the lake when Jerry was running for Congress. Was you?
I wasn't here then.
You weren't here then. Well, we went out in the big lake a couple of times and took the Kiwanis Club, and he had the big yacht, so he took us out. So I didn't know his son, but the old man. And of course, I may try to name myself because of Gordon Lawhead, the lead Rotary Club. We sponsored that. We started the Coopersville Club.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was initiated of the Baldwin Club. Well, anyway, this young Jarecki called me, and he says, Chuck, he said, I want to see it. It's very urgent. And he says, can you come over? So I said, where should I meet you? He says, come right over to the marina. So I drove over there, and I recognized him, that I'd seen him before, you know, but I was never, you know, close to him, except his dad and I were real good friends. And he always used to call me son, the old man. He was a hell of a nice guy, and he used to give his kid hell doing something screwy, you know. So anyway, he said, I got a problem. He said, I understand, and he says, you and Hank Hoback are like this. Yeah, buddy, buddy. And he said, can you find out what he'll burn down these buildings? I got to get him out of there. And so I asked, and then we walked. I know we went up. Well, we were down below. We walked down below because first bucket thing we were going through Poison Ivy. I saw a bunch of that shit. I wanted to see the hell out of there. And walked up there, and then I saw, you know, this big old house there. I'd seen it in the war, but I'd never been there, you know. So we walked down there, and geez, by the time I got out of there, I was full of crud and shit thing. He said that I got to burn them down. I said, you own them? He said, oh yeah. He said, but I got to clear them out. So I said, don't worry about it. I said, can you wait till August the 4th? Why? I said, never. I said, can you wait till August 4th? Yeah, I don't want to wait any longer than that. I said, okay. I said, dude, I don't want you to mention a goddamn thing to anybody. I said, I'll burn the fuckers down. It won't cost you nothing. But keep your mouth shut. So I left. I couldn't wait to get back to fire park. Walked in, I said, head down the street. Oh, come on in here. I said, no. I said, let's go in the garage. What's the matter? The fireman said, what the hell is, what else you got to do? So we're in the garage, we sat in the truck. And I said, hey, you and I are in trouble. God damn you, pull out that one of you done. I said, I called my Jarecki. I said, we got these old fish net place there, there's a couple houses there. I said, he wanted to know how much you would charge him to burn it down. I said, we're going to burn them down together. I said, it's not going to cost him anything. What do you mean? What do you mean? I said, Jesus Christ. I said, you've been hollering about Oettinger, got all this goddamn oil that he can't get rid of, and he's got you over a barrel. You've been talking to me about this for the last few years, about getting that fucking thing. So they were only about that tall, they about that big around, and they come up here like this, and a big cork in it, a great big cork, and then the sides were thin veneer, see?
Mm-hmm.
You had the whole fucking shed back there full of it, see? I knew that because when that airplane was there, I was there with Hank, see? So I said, then I said, last year we got that big landmine. I had a 600 piece of a landmine that I bought surplus from the proving grounds.
You mean it was a military landmine?
Yeah, yeah. It was about 6 inches wide. Say this is 6 inches. And about every 12 inches it was sold across an oily paper.
Yep.
Then there's gunpowder in there. What it is, dynamite. Mm-hmm. You know, it's powder. Mm-hmm. See? Well, the year before, we got rained out. So we put on the display Liberty. Postponed it.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't dare use a landmine. We were scared.
Mm-hmm.
First place, you'd walk up the hill 3 feet, you'd go back 10. You'd slide all over hell. There'd be potholes and beach grass and holes of all kinds. You know, it was a son of a bitch to get up there, see?
Had they planted that hill, remember when they put the barges across and put...
Yeah, yeah.
They had already done that.
Oh, yeah. That.
Not that.
No, no. What? That came later.
What year was that they did that?
Oh, that was later on. That was after the transfer of property. Ted Bolt got interested in it. And Bill Creshon was trying to promote a miniature musical fountain.
Oh, okay.
And that did get off the ground.
Yeah.
I was in Rotary at the time, see?
Yeah, yeah.
Finally he said, piss that, I want to go all the way, I want the world's biggest.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And that took off. He had the help of Gardner, Denver, Press Bills, and all that. I got him all the fucking lights the first place, so that was all...
Using those?
Yeah.
Still using
those? I got that goddamn things for nothing. You know?
For $5 a piece, he said.
Well, it was...
It wasn't very much.
It was... pocket expense, I remember.
Well,
I think the only thing we paid is a fee.
Yeah.
That was surplus airport wake up. So anyway, we had the landmine. We put all the fireworks. We took everything out of the original boxes and cleaned them all out. Then we put them back in there by size. And we put them up in the attic. The fire barn, God, if you did that today, you'd get arrested. Yeah, we did. Of course, that time, DNR wasn't around.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have all this shit.
Oh, shit.
So anyway, we took care of the fireworks. Then the framing, I made a great big American flag, and we put that away up in the attic. I had a hell of a time up there, but the firemen did all the work. And then the landmine, we hung in the hose tower. We hung it in the hose tower so it'd dry out. Well, we didn't realize it. We found out damn quick. When we took it down, Jesus Christ, was like a fucking rock. That tower all gelled. And I says, no way in hell, I'm never going to light that son of a bitch. Hank said, we got to get rid of this son of a bitch. I said, we're going to get rid of it August the 4th. I said, we'll take that fucking thing and we'll sneak it through. And I said, I'll buy 3,000 to 4,000 feet of extra lacing, you know, the fusing, see?
Uh-huh.
American type, you know, it's just thin and you light it. And it's slow. It's not like Japanese. Japanese is gone, see?
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, as soon as I got through talking to Hank, he says, come on. We got that fucking truck. I'll never forget that. My wife was a fucking man. I come home smelling like a fucking fish. I had juice all over hell. Went that fucking garage and reloaded the goddamn things on that fucking pickup truck that belonged to the street department or something. We had that fucking thing for. We drove out of the back of the fire barn and the partners,
what the fuck are you guys doing?
Dr. Hank. Hank said, oh, I said, I got to get rid of him. He said, so, get to David, you know, get to David. Never said a word, sir. We put it in the garage, sir, put it in the corner. There's some barricades around us so they couldn't see what the fuck the thing was and everything else. So then we made plans, and we was going to do that about a week before Coast Guard Pistol. So Hank and I and old the fireworks guy, lived in Martin. He had the Ottawa Fireworks Company.
No. Okay.
And he was a crazy son of a bitch. He'd take a fucking M80 and light it, put a gun and step on it, you know. Okay? But he had shoe leather like that.
Yeah.
You know? He did a lot of crazy things. So anyway, pick the card. The card.
Okay, oh yeah, I've heard you mention it before, yeah.
So, anyway, him and I and Hank, we just little fools. And Hoppy got took us across to the fucking tug, loaded with all this shit, see? So we went up, the first thing we did, we took the landmine, there was 600 feet of it, we took that damn thing and we started at the top floor. We come down the stairway and we wound it from room to room, room to room. Then we cut it. Then I fused it to lacings. And I let that coil, we put it in bushel baskets, coiled it up. Then we took the next piece and we went to the second house. Then I only had just a little bit left, we put that. That goddamn thing, Jesus Christ, I was straight to the window. I thought it caved in on us. But well, way back, underneath, all covered, you know, and all the fish nets in there, Jesus Christ.
They were still there.
Oh, yeah, they were all there. The house, there was old furniture and tables and reed rockers and all kinds of shit. There was a, you could live in it today. Christ, the sink was full of rust, you know, all that horseshit. So, fix that all up. Then the last thing we did, we started at the top of these goddamn barrels and we'd uncork them and we'd spray the living shit out of it. Get working room by room, all over hell. We had more on us than we had in there. And then they take us and I used all the lacing. So that night, we didn't have the firemen anywhere near there. We had places there, we fixed up pretty good. We had potholes in there, we had stakes in there where we wanted different size shells. Of course, at that time, about the biggest shell I think we had, it was about a, I don't think we had anything over, I don't think we had anything over 6/8 except that the finale, I fused a bunch of shit in together.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd have in these goddamn holes, and we'd cut the beach grass, or we'd store this after we get fired, because we had to carry all this stuff up there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody ever saw where we were, you know, where we had this all set. So nobody ever knew that. Didn't tell anybody. He didn't even tell his wife. He told his wife and the baby, but it was shit quick. So anyway, when we went over in the tub. And we had the amphibious duck.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, yeah.
And fucking Frank Rabelick was driving us on this, and he was a bullheaded bastard. And he said, well, right here, right here. No. He went over, what's the spy on it? We were hung up. Oh, we had a hell of a thing. Christ was in water that, you know, up this high, see. Rock of that thing, oh, we had a hell of a time. We had even broken loose. Then we had to carry all this shit over our shoulders, you know. And of course, at that time, it was blockades along. They're all busted to hell, you know, and you had to watch where you were going.
Yeah.
And we lined everything up there and had the firemen carry it, see? So, we got all set, got our firemen in there, and we had our traditional hot dogs, and hamburgers, and drinks. They were drinking in the potholes there, and Hank and I, and then we started really way. Hank used to always scare it. He didn't want one shell to top. He wanted to be sure that everyone broke, you know.
Uh-huh.
and I wanted speeds, you know, stuff like that.
Now tell me this, you'd already had the parade that day.
Yeah.
You had a parade. Yeah. And how many people would show up for the parade in those days? Had it really gained popularity, or was it
thing? We were getting, I would say at that time, hell, we was getting 40, 50,000 people.
Uh-huh.
See, of course, afterwards, like 150,000.
Sure.
Nothing to it. And hell, I know in Central Park, when we'd have all these military groups in there, I had a beautiful military section all the time. We'd have from the Assistant Secretary of State's office, they would send these spotters in. So in the 1st Division, they'd have a car with two of them in there, one for the left, one for the right. They all had maps of each block, the length of the block, stuff like that. So go down here and they'd get by the Zionist funeral home and they'd estimate that while the crowd was maybe 10 people back, maybe down to 6, so you take an average, so say 8, multiply by the, what do you call, divide by 1.5, and that's how many people you have, see?
Mm-hmm.
And this, I got the hell of an argument when we got the Central Park. I forget what we had, what the figure was, and Alan McCall said, hell, he says, you haven't got that many people in there. And I said, well, what are you talking about? Was you there? He said, yeah, I would do it. And I said, if you look at the bleachers from the Grand Haven High School, I said that we could seat 4,000 people. I said, just visualize, you know, just put that stadium there. What we've got where the people sit, you know, just one side.
Oh, I guess you're right.